And that brings us to our weekly political chat. And we notice, as Lindsay pointed out, that some in the Black community complain that the mainstream media only rely on the traditional leaders like the Reverends Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. So we wanted to take a look at today's emerging African-American political leaders. To join me in the studio today, Congresswoman Laura Richardson of California and Congressman Arthur Davis of Alabama. Welcome. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Congressman Richardson, I'd like to start with you. You were just recently elected. I think you probably are the newest of the new members. You were elected and seated following the death of Representative Juanita Millender McDonald. Some might say that you have a very different sort of path to leadership than she had. You know, unlike some of the earlier leaders in Congress, she didn't come up through the civil rights movement. You weren't a union activist. You were in the corporate world. Then you went to local politics, state politics. Do you think that the way you got into politics affects the way you lead?
It absolutely does, because I think the greatest thing that we need today, particularly with our youth, has to do with job development and economic development. And so to the degree that we have young leaders who have experience in that background, I think it helps us to understand what those critical needs are and to be able to delve into how we can solve them. But I will say what really got me wanting to get involved in politics, I was born in 1962, so I grew up in the civil rights movement. And so through seeing some of the things that happened, it inspired me that sometimes laws really don't make sense, and we need elected officials to step forward to right those wrongs. So I do have a tad bit of that background as well.
And Congressman Davis, your district includes Birmingham, Alabama. Mm-hmm. It's a place that is so rich in the history of the civil rights movement. But when we talk about leadership within the Black community, I do think it is fair to say that often, particularly the mainstream media, does tend to go to the traditional civil rights leadership. I wonder why you think that is. You think they're just better at pressing that button than you might be?
Well, you know, people tend to do what they've done before. So I think, Michelle, a lot of people in your business, a lot of people in your profession tend to go to people they're used to getting comments on. But what's interesting to me as someone who's been in this town for a short period of time, only 5 years, has been in politics only 5 years, I don't know if there are really dramatic differences in the way a lot of us look at these issues based on generation. I think that there's a presumption sometimes that, well, people born after 1960 look at it one way. People born before that look at it another way. This is the way that I put it. The challenges that we are facing today and the challenges that our predecessors were facing are very similar in that they're all about widening the circle of opportunity in American life. This country's been around for a little while now, and at any given time, there's a significant group of people who were economically and politically excluded. And at one point, the civil rights struggle was very much about lifting obvious barriers to voting and going in restaurants and sitting at lunch counters. The barriers are more subtle now. They're not written down in a book anywhere to be enforced by local sheriffs, but they're just as real in terms of gaps in health care, gaps in the quality of education. Right now, even we have gaps in politics in this country. While we have, for the first time, a Black candidate has a serious chance to win the presidency, we have one Black in the United States Senate. We have one Black governor. We haven't reached the point where voters are regularly accustomed to voting to people who don't look like them racially. So the challenges, I think, are very much the same today as they were then. They just have a different form.
Congressman Davis, though, you're known for being, or you're perceived by some as being different or more conservative than the traditional African-American leadership has been deemed to be. Do you see yourself that way, or do you think that perhaps there's a misconception about what the Black political consensus is?
Michelle, I don't really buy into labels a lot. You know, people use the term conservative and, you know, look, we have a Republican, or we had a Republican Congress that ran up some of the biggest deficits we had in the modern era, and they didn't seem that conservative when they did that.
But on the hot button issues, you're considered pro-life, you're considered pro-gun rights as opposed to pro-gun control.
Not pro-life. Mm-hmm. I'm pro-choice, but I do think there's a Second Amendment right to bear arms. I think a woman has a right to choose. I don't support partial birth abortions. I support hate crime legislation, don't support gay marriage. That position and that set of positions, frankly, places me in the mainstream. Most voters that I serve, Black and white, don't get up in the morning and put themselves in a conservative box or liberal box. They have a set of instincts about these issues. And I think that's one difference between people and politics. A lot of the people who drive the political debate in this town want to push you into an ideological category. Voters, I think, are much more varied in their thinking.
Michelle, if I wanted, what's great about having two members is sometimes people come actually from very different backgrounds. And I'd like to just chime in on something Mr. Davis said. I come from a district where I have always represented predominantly other races than myself. So I actually think the voters are getting it, in my personal experience in California. When I ran for city council, my area was 45% Latino, 28% Cambodian, and only 26% African American. When I ran for the assembly, my area was, again, about 40% Hispanic, 30% Caucasian, only 16% African American, and now the same in the Congress. So I think what we're going to have to do as African Americans is, number one, we have to be the best. We have to be balanced. We have to come to the table with a full set of experiences that we can reach out to the electorate and say, look, yes, I might have my particular issues, my goals, my history of how I was raised, but I can deliver for my entire community. Now, I realize California is far more progressive than some other states, you know, in this nation, but I think we are beginning to see, and really, I believe if we're going to continue to have African Americans who are elected, we're going to have to not rely upon only a mainstream African-American population, but we're going to have to be able to demonstrate to everyone that we can represent them well.
This leads me to a question I had for both of you. I hope we have time for both of you to answer. And I wanted to ask about this this whole black enough issue that, Barack Obama, the presidential candidate, the Democratic presidential candidate, whom you mentioned earlier, Congressman, he's been asked, and I know it irritates him, it irritates his wife, it irritates his campaign, it irritates a lot of people, but this issue whether he's black enough is one that he has had to address, unlike, you know, others. And I wonder if that any politician who's part of the post-civil rights generation is going to have to face this. Do you think that question goes away at some point as districts become more diverse, as yours is? Or does that question intensify because districts are more diverse and people are looking to see whether you're really on their side? Congresswoman, if you'd start with that. And then if Congressman Davis, if we have time, I'd love to hear from you.
Well, I've lived that myself. My mother is white and my father is African American. And my entire life I've grown up with some people saying, you know, I'm not black enough for my black friends that I hang out with. And for white people, it's like, well, you know, you've got a little, you know, black there, so you're not white enough. So that's the fact of life of what we live in. But to me, what I have found is that what we have to demonstrate is, are we black enough in what we know of our issues? Are we black enough in what we've lived and what we've fought for and what we've delivered for the people that we represent? And if we can demonstrate a strong record of that, that's what's black enough. Have I provided housing? Have I provided job development?
Congressman, you got
45
seconds.
I think the black experience in this country is so incredibly diverse. The black experience in this country runs from people who participate in the New York Philharmonic Orchestra to Michael Vick. That's why this guy on Fox is in trouble now, is because he thinks that black people know how to eat in restaurants. He doesn't fully understand the diversity of the black experience. So I don't think you can put black people in a box, and I don't think you can put blacks in a box ideologically. My black constituents span the gamut from very conservative on some issues to very populist on some issues. At all given times, they don't see themselves as ideological. They want results in politics. They want politicians who can deliver. That's more important than ideology.
Congressman Arthur Davis of Alabama and Congresswoman Laura Richardson of California, they were both kind enough to join us in our studios in Washington. I hope you'll come back and see us.
Thanks for
Absolutely.
Having us.
Absolutely. Thank you, Michelle.